All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Matt Suazo. I work on the Google open source security team. I'll be speaking about build auditing as part of the OSS Rebuild project. So OSS Rebuild aims to reproduce open source packages, the focus on language package ecosystems. We currently support PyPI, NPM, Crates, Ruby, Gems, thanks to one of our organizers, and Debian as well. So we provide evidence of our reproduction in the form of a Salsa attestation and include our build setup in the attestation itself, so you know, public users can run that themselves. This process happens out of band from the actual maintainer upload and the sort of first party provenance publication pathway, which is another P word, which is nice because maintainers then don't need to modify their build release process at all. They can even release from their laptop. If we can rebuild it, they can have an attestation from a trusted builder. And I guess first, while I'm up here now, OSS Rebuild is not just me. I have a whole team of engineers, both on our team and external collaborators, and would not be up here, and the project would not exist without them. So to get more into sort of what it looks like, and I have made this as hard as possible to see. Imagine you can see the boxes and arrows, but the architecture can point. So we have our upstream source going into our build. We get the upstream package. We compare them, the stabilized comparison, and publish them as an attestation. The whole slideshow will be like this. So I guess let's get started. That would be incredibly helpful, I think. Could have checked this somehow. Oh, jeez. Oh, boy. Okay. I mean,
it's readable.
Yeah, hopefully you can see the boxes. Just won't look good. Yeah, exactly. Please use your imagination. So with the sort of attestations we're publishing, again, this can be in addition to or instead of a maintainer publishing their own first-party attestation. So when an existing one, is present, when the publisher, has provided one, we can corroborate it. And as will be the subject of the talk, we can also augment it. So adding detail that maybe was not present during the original build. Maybe going to an even higher level. What is the trust sort of relationship we're talking about here? So we have this source code here, hopefully understandable, visible. We have our build environment that we trust, we think is trustworthy. And with some effort, obviously the equal sign is doing a lot of work, but we can get a reproducible artifact out the other side. But like all models, it's not accurate. It's just convenient, maybe. Neither the upstream source nor our build environments are inherently trustworthy. So while a convenient assumption, it's certainly not a safe one. And as you actually show of hands, who has seen a presentation in the last 2 years with the Xe attack in it? Who has seen 3? 5. Okay, so I'm in a similar boat, but for all of you who may have only heard it once, let this be, you know, another opportunity. Suffice it to say, 3 years of social engineering sort of culminates with this nice, elegant, effective, scary attack on ultimately Debian's SSH package offering, sort of pre-auth remote code execution. The maintainer gained control of the project and was able to backdoor exeutils. So the backdoor itself is split between the published source code. It's underhanded. Again, a lot of elements of it were well obfuscated. And the additional trigger, ultimately, was published out of tree, so in the source tarball, malicious, that enables the build in the Debian build environment, Debian and Ubuntu, maybe, which are probably quite similar. And that results in the artifact being compromised and fully reproducible. Right? Debian project reproduced it. Great. Looks good. Obviously not. So that was maybe an animating moment for our project, and I assume many others in the space. And so we sort of restructured maybe OSS Rebuild's approach to not just verification by repetition, but verification by observation, in addition. And sort of what we found has been, we think, generalizable across package ecosystems, not just Debian. So our instrumented environment sort of comprises maybe three pieces. Our execution sandbox, which is distrusted by the rest of the system, just does the build. The network proxy, which records fetched resources without needing to modify the internal build, which is important for us because given the scope, we're not really in the business of being able to run a distro, basically. And finally, our syscall analyzer, or graph construction, which comprises an eBPF-based monitor and a data flow graph builder library we'll talk about right now. Oh, well, network proxy first. So we terminate TLS between the build, this proxy component, record the trace log. We have the ability to modify inline the results we get back upstream. But more importantly, we are able to, record everything coming out of NPM install. And another, tidbit, which is nice, is that even if the build is launching separate containers, we actually hook the container creation process in the proxy itself, and we can add in the trust root and the network configuration to that container launch so that it passively sort of adopts the path we have built through the proxy, which is nice and necessary when you need it, but for Debian, for instance, you don't. The SysGraph SDK is recently open source, but is our library for turning the events generated by our eBPF monitor into the process and data flow graph we'll be talking about. Pretty straightforward. The graph compresses efficiently, which is very important. So we're, instead of talking maybe gigabytes, talking megabytes still, but what we get for it is a process and file system trace that's tremendously useful as a basis for analysis. With this sort of exhaustive view of the build, who cares? Well, even beyond, detecting XZ, What we found was that it has proven really valuable for actually working towards reproducibility and achieving reproducibility. So start there. Much ink has been spilled on dependency management and lock files, as I'm sure everyone in this room is acquainted with, and our experiences have been no different. Dependency manifests are convenient fictions, and really, when we want to know what's going on in a build, especially portably across ecosystems, there's really no better place than the network trace itself. So, at best, they're imprecise. At worst, well, let's take a look. Okay. What version of Axum do you think that is going to fetch?
0.74.
Oh, it really looks like that, doesn't it?
I feel like you're setting us up.
It is a trick. It is 0.8.8. Not only does it upgrade the patch version, it also upgrades the minor version, which is fun. Let's pick on someone else. This is Gradle. What version of Guava do you think we're going to be using?
28, for sure.
Yeah. 31.1, obviously, just like we asked. Okay, so what version of tools are we going to use?
Good at some is irrelevant to what version you
use. Yeah. Trick question. It's the same trick as all the rest, but it is still a trick question. Yeah, it is. Just the record of the last person to have built it. Yeah. So, 038. Another fun tidbit we can get from this sort of privileged position we have in the build is that many package ecosystems will do creative things, say during installation time, to varying degrees. And one end of that spectrum is NPM, and maybe the most permissive ecosystem. So our network instrumentation will tell you that, on this call, you'll see all of these. Okay, how many people can read it? All right, whatever. It's more than just registry NPM JS. There's this big GitHub release and this long URL asset that is dynamically accessed based on the local installation environment, sort of at runtime, which is nice because we get platform specific binaries, but this is out of sort of the normal NPM model, right? If I have an attestation, say, for my NPM package, that doesn't include these, right? What are they? Who knows? Are they guaranteed to continue to resolve to the same artifact? No, and they don't. And this is the snippet in installed JS in Phantom JS prebuilt that does the dirty work. So shifting gears to the sysgraph for reproducibility, there's an awful lot of tribal knowledge in debugging reproducibility issues, and detailed execution tracing found allows us to encode more of that knowledge than we could normally into something that maybe resembles a linter or a set of rules that might be able to guide you through debugging an issue like this. This is generally easier than source code auditing because the problematic cause, say, of a reproducibility issue, often far removed from its effect. So you may be configuring environment variables sort of centrally and exporting them through your call stack, maybe not obvious, sort of at the site, what's happening. Maybe to go through a couple of these, reading CPU info is not wrong, right? It's not bad, but it is often an indication that your build is doing dynamic things based off of the core count or, you know, scaling parallelism of the build in response to the machine it's running on. If you run it on a different machine, that's where you get into problems. So this is a frequent thing where you can often just set these parameters, and rarely builds will just try to do it themselves. And therapy dragons. We're going to this next one, locales. Yeah, huge sources of issues, especially with make, where things like the sort order of arguments into a linker depend on the sorting your locale supports or permits. So seeing things like LCLC should give you the warm fuzzies. The file prefix map, similarly, that's just saying don't include my local build path in the say debug symbols or in the file macro. So you like to see that on these command lines. Those without it, that could be a cause of issues. The bottom one, I guess on the flip side of the parallelism question, J being set anywhere could be an issue. Didn't put it red or yellow, but it's just something to something to consider. And instability. Graphs work great for this, right? You are recording what's happening in the build, comparing them across multiple runs of the same thing. It's very easy to identify non-determinism, either in file accesses, you know, argument order, that sort of thing. This is, it's been tremendously useful. And now tracing for detection. So consider the XE case. Now that sort of instrumenting the build has helped us reproduce it, it looks good, but how do we prevent XE? Why is XE's build reading a test file at all? It never did this before. Why has it started doing that during the build process? Say with tests disabled. So this is now really sticks out like a sore thumb. We can pretty effectively find these test files. And again, you find a really sharp increase, well, from 0 to 3. But that's as good an increase. Yeah, you love to see it. Very obvious. Similarly, can't really see this, but why is head writing out this .o file? That is also sore thumb territory. You know, glaringly apparent, maybe with the benefit of hindsight, but an easy rule. .o files come from compilers. Let's keep it that way. Declaring invariants like this for build behavior can really point us towards this anomalous or buggy, in any case, suspect build behavior. Right. So what I was alluding to before, we can generalize to sort of comparing the two adjacent graphs of a build and trying to figure out sort of what is interesting about it. This is one of the more complex changes in version over version, non-major version over version changes in Debian packages that I could find. It does change the build process, but in terms of summarization, it's mostly path and version changes that are easily sort of structured. Like, there's no fanciness here, really, that's going on. It is just comparing the two graphs. So the key insight here being that the flux between versions is often low, low enough that we can manageably identify variance when it happens. It's not shown here, but file accesses can similarly be diffed between builds, and while, you know, if you add a file, you expect that file to show up in the build. So that's not surprising, but you're dealing with a similar ability to sort of model and establish expectations for how some change in the repo affects the change in the build. Unnecessary behavior. So may have been radicalized on this point, but we just don't do anything in a build except build. We don't need tests. So the PhantomJS dependency, downloaded thing from the internet, is never going to run in a build, but NPM doesn't differentiate dev and test dependencies. So if we want the build, which requires dev dependencies, we're going to pull the test dependencies down. This with SysGraph, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It is easier to identify these cases of linters, tests triggering, but the noise causes more difficulty for analysis. Like, imagine running a headless browser and seeing how the graph lights up and how to reason about that change over version changes. Yes, so please leave CI to CI and builds to builds. It's hard enough already. And thankfully, Debian has recently, last 6 months, made a push for packages to actually observe the please don't run tests flag. A lot of packages just chose not to. So thank you if you're doing that. And looking forward, runtime interpreters are a big challenge. What you saw was actually with a bash, a shell hook that we added into our eBPF monitor. So it's not impossible, right, to do this. We are sort of trying to scale down our the granularity of our ability to get at the behavior of the build. Runtime interpreters like Python, the JVM, make that challenging or opaque. We've had some initial luck, but this is, a very interesting future direction for build instrumentation. I think there's a lot that can be done there. Build complexity. Builds are software that have to do a lot of things, right? You have to build portably, allow configuration, parameterization, and it needs to be usable to the end user. But really, we don't need that. We just need the build to do like the 100 things that we tell it to. So if we maybe project that down onto a concrete build, think of it maybe as like unrolling or materializing a specific build. I think that's an interesting area to go where we might not have the constraints of it needing to be approachable or easily manipulable by humans. And maybe a last direction that at least I find interesting is having a sort of golden graph, a golden image of the build that we can use to guide sort of porting or packaging, say, into a distro, a piece of software. So we have this sort of re-implementation, right, or a wrapper at best, that we need to do to get a build into a distro or into some new context. Having a detailed description of what a good build looks like for that thing is really useful as a sort of mechanical way of evaluating maybe your progress towards that endpoint. And with execution traces, we really have that ability. To wrap up, excited by these enhancements across all the ecosystems we support in OSS Rebuild. Largely, right, without any involvement of maintainers, they don't need to. They can just sort of get this detailed data about their build without, you know, them needing to modify their CI, their release process, anything. The prospect of this sort of zero cost improvement is really what, you know, interested me in starting the project. And we'd love for anyone who shares this to get involved. Repo, docs. We don't and can't make all of our data public, but if you are interested, we are very willing to collaborate and share that. It's much easier at a more human scale to share it than just to stick it on the internet as we do attestations. We're also interested in how you all can apply these tools and methods to your own areas of interest. Everything is open source on OSS Rebuild. Please check it out. And we believe there's potential here, and we're eager to see what you can build and rebuild. Questions?
One question, because we already
Yeah, sorry.
I'm going to speak afterwards, so I don't do the question.
Yes, who was the question at the front here?
No? I'm just curious, have you actually discovered anything with this at this point, or has it mostly been you're trying to figure out how to prevent the next case, kind of like what state of this being a useful tool is this in?
It's difficult at sort of a large scale to differentiate between things that are objectionable and things that are like bad. We've definitely found lots of objectionable things. The last sort of allusion there to future directions, it would be really interesting to try to remediate that badness sort of just with what we know. Like, hey, please stop having this effect happen. And, you know, try to set that as an endpoint. But, yeah.
Right, thank you very much.
Thank you.